Jacob in the text. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are known as the fathers. If you read the Gospels, you will see the scribes and Pharisees, the people saying things like, the Lord appeared to our fathers. That's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, we know Abraham, then Isaac, then Jacob. Why isn't Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and somebody? Well, it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and then the 12 tribes of Israel. The 12 tribes of Israel. And what we're going to look at now is how Jacob fathered the 12 tribes. And in Genesis chapter 29, verse 1, Jacob continued on his journey. Remember, he had left his parents down in southern Judah and was heading to Haran to find Uncle Laban. He came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the field with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. It's a good reason for the sheep to be near the well. The stone over the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return to the stone to the place over the mouth of the well. Jacob asked the shepherds, "My brothers, where are you from?" "We're from Haran," they replied. Remember, that's where Jacob was heading. He said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" "Yeah, we know him," they answered. Then Jacob asked, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." So Jacob gets introduced to Rachel, and Rachel then runs back and tells Uncle Laban, or that would be her father Laban, about Jacob in verse 13. "As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home, and there Jacob told him all these things. And Laban said to him, 'You are my own flesh and blood.'" After Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, "Just because you're a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." That threw me for a long time. Here's Leah and Rachel, and Jacob sees Rachel and falls in love with her and wants her for a wife. And when Laban comes and says, "Well, you know, you're my sister's son. You shouldn't work around here for free. What do you want for wages?" "Well, I'll serve you for 7 years for Rachel." You'd think he'd said, "I'll serve you for 6 months," or "I'll serve you for a year." I mean, 7 years. That's real patience. That threw me for a long time. But in order to understand that a little better, you've got to get the chronology of Jacob and Esau's life together. Jacob and Esau were twins. Well, a long time ago back in the text, Esau got married to those Hittite women when he was 40. And if you'll do your chronological work now, which you can do because the Bible says that Jacob was 130 when he went down into Egypt in the second year of the famine. Remember that Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt. There were 7 years of famine, then 7 years of 7 years of plenty, then 7 years of famine, and it was in the second year of the famine that Jacob took his children and went down and moved into Egypt to be with Joseph. And in the second year of that famine, Jacob was 130. Joseph would have been 39. So if you subtract that out, you find out that Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born. And you'll find out from the text that Jacob had been serving Laban for 14 years when Joseph was born. So you back 14 years out and you find out that Jacob was 77 here. He's 77. When Jacob shows up at Padan Aram, he's 77 years old, and he says, and he's not married yet. He's been hanging around the home, living, you know, with his mom, messing with the house plants, and he's 77 years old. He hasn't been married, but he sees Rachel, and he wants to marry her. So he gets married, by the way, 7 years later at 84. So I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, it's better I give her to you than to some other man. Stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel. But they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Boy, that's touching. Jeez. He was so excited just to be around her. 7 years seemed like a few days to him. Verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My time is completed and I want to lie with her. Okay, time's up. I get to sleep with my wife now. 7 years has passed. Verse 22. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. Verse 22 again, or verse 23, when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob. This was a good trick. You know, Jacob had been the supplanter, the tricker, the heel grabber all of his life. Well, here's Uncle Laban, and he's going to out-trick the trickster. Leah was the daughter that Jacob did not want to marry. But in the ancient Near East, remember, no street lights. Probably would not have been a full moon. Things were really dim, and particularly in a black goat hair tent, it would have been extremely dark. And so Jacob simply goes into the tent with this woman that he has been told was Rachel. And remember that in the ancient Near East, the men and women didn't hang out before marriage. The marriages were arranged, so he wouldn't have had a lot to be able to tell the difference between Rachel and Leah in the dark. But when the morning came, he can tell the difference. And, hey, it's Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what's this you've done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? Verse 26, Laban replied, you know, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. But I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's work out a deal here, verse 27. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years. Boy, what a bargain this guy Laban drives. He says, I'll give you Rachel, sure, but you've got to work another 7 years. Of course, I'll give you Rachel in advance. So here's Jacob at 84 years old, taking a wife, and within a week, he's got two wives, they're sisters, and they don't like each other. Verse 28, Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant girl Bilhah to daughter Rachel as her maidservant. So we've got Bilhah and Zilpah. So Bilhah is with Rachel, and Zilpah is with Leah. And that's going to be important as we get into the chapter here. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and worked for Laban another 7 years. Verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. Like Sarai, like Rebekah, now Rachel is barren. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben. Ru is behold, R-E-U. Ben is a son, and you might remember the movie Ben-Hur, son of her. So she says, I'm going to call him, behold, a son. And she said, it's because the Lord has seen my misery. So surely my husband will love me now. And remember what a curse it was not to have children in this culture. So she says, look, my husband's going to love me now, and behold, my son. Verse 33, she conceived again. When she gave birth to a son, she said, because the Lord heard that I am not loved, She gave me this one too. So she named him Simeon. Simeon means hearing or heard, because she said the Lord has heard that I was not loved. Verse 34, again she conceived. And when she gave birth to a son, she said, now at last my husband will become attached to me, because I've borne him three sons. So he was called Levi. And Levi means joiner. Joiner. Because he would join Leah and Jacob. Verse 35, she conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, this time I will praise the Lord. So she named him Judah, which means praise. Then she stopped having children. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing any children, Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, give me children or I'll die. And remember this feeling of being cursed of God and not having children went very, very deep. Remember how Sarai felt with Abram and said, you know, the Lord has withheld me from having children, so here's Hagar, my maidservant. And Rachel here, it's this heart cry, give me children or I'll die. Jacob became very angry with her and said, am I in the place of God who's kept you from having children? It was pretty obvious since Leah was having children. It's like, hey, it's not my fault. Then she said, okay, here's Bilhah, my maidservant. Now, Rachel here is going to do exactly what Sarai had done with Abraham. She's going to say, okay, the law says you have to have intercourse with my slave girl so I can have legal children by her. So here's Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that she can bear children for me and that through her I too can build a family. So she gave him her servant, Bilhah, as a wife. Jacob slept with her, and she became pregnant and bore a son. Then Rachel said, God has vindicated me. He has listened to my plea and given me a son. Because of this, she named him Dan. Rachel's servant, Bilhah, conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, I have had a great struggle with my sister, and I have won. So she named him Naphtali. Naphtali means wrestling or struggling. By the way, Rachel, she may have been pretty, but she had a fair amount of bitterness in her life, and she wasn't the most godly individual. I mean, you can see that in the way she names her children. God has vindicated me. You know, I've wrestled with my sister. How would you like to grow up and your name is wrestling because your mother wrestled with her sister? Also, it was Rachel that when Jacob and his clan left Uncle Laban's house, Rachel stole the household idols and took them with her. So she wasn't the world's most godly individual. Verse 9, when Leah saw that she had stopped having children, it's kind of like, it was 4-0, and now it's 4-2. Her side's catching up. What am I going to do? So Leah says, she took her maidservant Zilpah, I'm in verse 9, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Now you've got to sleep with Zilpah so I can have more children. And Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, what good fortune! So she named him Gad. I'm catching up again. So in all now, because of this baby war going on between Leah and Rachel, Jacob's going to have 12 sons and a daughter. And his first was Reuben by Leah, and then Simeon, Levi, and Judah, all by Leah, and then Dan and Naphtali by Bilhah, who was Rachel's maid, and then Gad and Asher by Zilpah, then Issachar and Zebulun, sons 9 and 10, again by Leah, so that Leah had actually 6 of the 12 sons herself. And then Rachel finally gave birth with Joseph and Benjamin and died in childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin. So it's this kind of baby war, and then Leah had Dinah also. So this baby war resulted in these children of Jacob, and of course Jacob's name will be turned to Israel. So this is where we get Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and now the 12 tribes of Israel. And that's how we get the 12 tribes of Israel, which will later take over the promised land. And of course, Joseph was the one sold into slavery. It was from Judah the fourth child of Leah, that Jesus Christ will come. You have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and in the Christ line then, Judah. And of course, Jesus Christ is called Jesus Christ, King of the Judeans. And chapter 32 happens in chapter 30. Jacob stays with Uncle Laban, and after he serves his 14 years, then he hangs around six more years and works for flocks and herds. And then he leaves in chapter 31, leaves the area, heading back into the promised land. It's in this chapter that you can see that Rachel stole the gods from Uncle Laban. In chapter 32, Jacob is coming back into the promised land, but he's scared. He gets gripped with some fear because the last time he was in the promised land, his brother Esau said he would kill Jacob, and Jacob is definitely concerned that Esau may still be feeling badly about him. And it turns out in the chapter that's not true. And Esau, who is by that time very happily settled and has flocks and herds and plenty of land to hunt for himself, is happy and bears no more grudge. It's in chapter 2 that Jacob wrestles, 32, that Jacob wrestles with an angel and gets his name changed. We ought to look at that in Genesis 32:28. In Genesis chapter 2, Genesis 32:28. The man said, this man is an angel, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. A lot of different commentators translate the name Israel differently. The one who contends with God, or the one who struggles with God, or perhaps differently, now God's contender, or the one who will struggle for God. But Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and it's significant now through the rest of the Bible that whether God calls Jacob Jacob or Israel reflects on what God is trying to communicate. Because when God is talking about the weakness of Jacob, the failures of Jacob, the faults of Jacob, you will see the name Jacob. When God is talking about the blessings, the things that God has done for Jacob, then he will be called Israel in the text. You look at chapter 35. In chapter 35, in verse 8, this is Deborah. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died and was buried under the oak below Bethel. So it was named Allon Bachuth. The interesting thing to note here about Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, dying, and you can see that Deborah had been hanging around a long time. She had been many, many years of faithful service. She had traveled with Rebekah from Padan Aram way back when Abraham sent a servant to bring a wife back for Isaac, and Deborah dies here. The fact that Deborah at this point was with Jacob and no longer was with Rebekah indicates that Rebekah had died sometime earlier. And that's one of the reasons I said earlier in the text that Rebekah, in having Jacob sent away, would never see her favorite son again. Then, verse 16 of this same chapter, Genesis 35, Rachel is going to die and Benjamin is going to be born. Verse 16, then they moved on from Bethel, and while they were still some distance from Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty. And as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for you will have another son." Remember that Rachel had given birth to Joseph. As she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Benoni. But his father named him Benjamin. Benoni means Ben, remember, Ben is son of Benoni, son of my sorrow. But his father named him Benjamin, son of my right hand. So verse 19, so Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and to this day, that pillar marks Rachel's tomb. Israel moved on again and pitched his tent between Midgo-Edgar. Well, then the text goes on. You can follow the life of Jacob here a little bit and his sons and some of the trouble he had with his sons. In chapter 35, verse 27, 25:37, Jacob came home to his father Isaac in Mamre near Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had stayed. Isaac lived 180 years. Now that's longer than his father Abraham had lived. Abraham had lived 175 years. Isaac lived 180 years. Then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of years, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. So this now is Isaac dying at 180, and you can see that there's no animosity between Jacob and Esau, and they get together to bury their father. Genesis 36 talks about Esau. Remember that Esau, it was promised originally when the two children were in the womb, when Rebecca originally was pregnant with them, a revelation to her was two nations are in thy womb. In Genesis 36, we see more of the development of Esau's descendants and how that prophecy of him being a nation would be fulfilled. And in chapter 37 to chapter 50, there's so much in these last chapters of Genesis. This is the story of Joseph, how Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt, and how he came to power in Egypt, the 7 years of plenty, the 7 years of famine. It's excellent, excellent reading. We don't have the time to read it in this class. I would like, however, to go to chapter 49. The story of Joseph in Egypt is just a fabulous, fabulous story. And of course, there were 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, and it was in the second year of the 7 years of famine that Jacob gathered up all of his children and brought them down into Egypt, and they stayed there long after the famine, which caused them a lot of trouble because, especially after the Pharaoh arose that didn't know Joseph, they were enslaved. But in chapter 49, verse 1, Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in the days to come." Remember that the entire Old Testament from Genesis 3:15 through Malachi focuses on Jesus Christ, that promised seed. We know he was going to be a son of Adam. We knew he was going to be a son of Seth. After the flood, we knew he was going to come from Shem. And then as the Shemites multiplied, God picked Abraham and said, "In you, Abraham, will all nations of the earth be blessed." And now we know that the promised seed will come through Abraham. Abraham was told that the seed would come through Isaac. Then Isaac was told that the seed would be through Jacob. And Jacob, of course, was told that himself as he was fleeing to Paddan Aram. "In you will all nations of the earth be blessed." But Jacob had 12 sons. Jacob had 12 sons. Which one of those sons will continue the Christ line? And here in Genesis chapter 49, Jacob assembles all of his sons and has a word of prophecy over his various sons. And I want to point out verse 8, Judah, because it was through Judah that that Christ line would come. "Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his." That the scepter will not depart from Judah, the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs. That one to whom it belongs is Jesus Christ. And the obedience of the nations is his. And that's exactly right. The Psalm 2 is very clear. He will rule them with a rod of iron. So the prophecy on Jacob's deathbed was that Judah would be the line, would carry the line from which Jesus Christ would come. It's later on in this 49th chapter that Jacob dies. If you look at verse 29, and Jacob gave them these instructions. "I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave in the field of Ephron the Hittite." You remember way back now, Abraham had bartered with the Hittites for a cave where he could bury Sarai. So now, Jacob is saying, "I want to be buried in that cave of Ephron the Hittite, the cave in the field of Machpelah, near Mamre in Canaan, which Abraham bought as a burial place from Ephron the Hittite along with the field. There Abraham and his wife Sarah were buried. There Isaac and his wife Rebekah were buried. And there I buried Leah." Remember, Rachel had died as they were traveling and was buried in a different place. But Leah was buried in the same cave. Verse 32, "The field and the cave in it were bought from the Hittites." Verse 33, "When Jacob had finished giving instructions to his son, he drew up his feet into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people." In chapter 50, there's more time that goes by where Joseph is ruling over Egypt. And then in chapter 50, verse 22, Joseph dies. And as Joseph dies in verse 25, Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, "God will surely come to your aid," because they're all down there in Egypt. "And then you must carry my bones up from this place." So Joseph died at the age of 110, and after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. And at the Exodus, his bones were carried out of Egypt as the Israelites left Egypt. Later, if you read the book of Joshua, in the 24th chapter of Joshua, in the 32nd verse, it says that Joseph's bones were buried at Shechem. And if you remember Shechem, Shechem was the city that Abraham first spent the night in. When the text said Abraham was in Haran, up in Mesopotamia, and God spoke to him and said, "Leave your country, leave your kindred, keep going into that land that I have showed thee." And he left Haran, and it says he came into the land and he stopped at Shechem. And that's the first place that is specifically mentioned that Abraham would have stopped in the promised land. Well, the Israelites had managed to get themselves down into Egypt, and Abraham had been down to Egypt, but he turned around and came back. But this time the Israelites didn't manage to make it out of Egypt. They stayed in Egypt. In Exodus chapter 1, Exodus now is the book that will pick up the traveling out of Egypt. And we'll pick up the text here in Exodus chapter 1. In Exodus chapter 1, these are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family. And then it lists the different people that went into Egypt. Well, verse 8, "Then a new king, who didn't know about Joseph, came to power in Egypt. Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become much too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor and brick and mortar, with all kinds of work in the fields. and in their hard labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Sapira and Pua, "When you help the Hebrew women in childbirth and observe them on the delivery stool, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live." Obviously, the Egyptians were concerned about the potential, as they had said earlier, that if war broke out, that the Israelites would have joined the enemies, and so they can remedy that by killing off all the men. Verse 17, "The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, 'Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?' The midwives answered Pharaoh, 'Hebrew women aren't like the Egyptian women. They're vigorous. They give birth before we arrive.' So God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. Because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: 'Every boy that's born you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live.' It was from this oppression in Egypt that Moses will deliver the children of Israel and will pick up there on the next tape."